In that pamphlet that I was referring to at the beginning, The New Dispensation, Swami emphatically states that he deplores sectarianism. And partly that reluctance to try to speak of one path as superior to another sometimes inhibits, you know, one's that feel like true statements. Am I still clicking in and out a little bit? So it has to do with the box, not the wire. Okay, the best we can do. But he still writes, he said, Master himself said that his incarnation was what he called a special dispensation. And the way Swami described that is he said, in the sea of Maya, every so often there appears a circle of calm in which it's easier to perceive a divine grace. I asked Swami when he said that, do you mean souls actually get more than they deserve? And he said, well, in a sense, yes. But of course, that he was joking. It's sort of hard to even put your mind around what that might really mean. But what Swami was trying to put across is that many powerful forces have come together through this particular line of masters, not in any way to make them superior, or it's not a competition. When you're dealing with infinity, there's no way everybody gets a gold medal. It's all the same, right? But from the point of view of the devotee, what Swamiji was really trying to get us to understand is to expand our own understanding and our receptivity to be able to embrace what's being offered to us. And even the mere fact that it's a line of masters instead of a single guru has a picture for us. And this picture is related to the fact that we're in a transition between yugas, and we're in an ascending transition instead of a descending transition. Rama came at a transition between the yugas. Krishna came at a transition between the yugas. Jesus was in the middle of Kali Yuga going down. And both of them helped the transition, but it was a transition in which things became narrower and more materialistic and more limited rather than expanded. So it's happening when we're going from Kali Yuga to Dwapara in an ascending cycle, is that much more can be embraced and included in the spiritual life. Whereas at the end, after Jesus died, his disciples went off into isolated monasteries. They went off to meditate in caves. They went off to be desert fathers. There was no way that they could take what they had received from Jesus and bring it out to the world, because the world was going into a narrower and darker and a less receptive period. Where we are is that we're coming out of that. We have come out of that, and we're going to an ever-expanded, ever more inclusive period. So you go from Babaji to Lahiri. Babaji lives alone in the Himalayas, this life that we can't even imagine. Lahiri was a government accountant for 25 years in Varanasi. He was married when he was 18. He had at least the two sons. Sometimes you hear that there were more children, but at least you hear about him having two sons. I believe at the age of 24 or 23, he began to work as an accountant. And I think it was about 25 years that he worked as an accountant, during which time he also did small civic duties like, you know, help start a school and help with this thing and that thing. And he was raising his children, he was taking care of his wife, he was living in his little house in Varanasi. I say his little house because I've been there. It's a small house, what can you say? In a little courtyard, a couple of stories. You hear about the balcony where Lahiri Mahashaya expounded the Bhagavad Gita. The balcony, as Swami pointed out, it's about as big as one of these. You know, like maybe 8 or 9 people could gather there. You think this world-changing avatar who brought Kriya Yoga out of the Himalayas back to modern times, we have this picture of what he was like. It's hard to imagine a more humble existence from the outside that this man lived, or a more from the outside ordinary one. You know, he just did his householder duty. Now, when he met Babaji in the Himalayas, he was already well established as a householder. And Babaji made it clear to him, here's your blanket from your past life. Here's your water jug. I've kept all these things polished and ready for you. I mean, what was Lahiri to think, except, you know, that life, which must have seemed extraordinarily distant, of the wife and the children and the office. He just must have assumed it was gone. But in fact, it was just the opposite. That was the life. That was how he was supposed to show us that we're supposed to live. So what the example is set for all of us is that there is no form. There is no one way that this life is supposed to be lived. There's no right. There's no wrong. There's just every choice that's open is open to us, and it has been exemplified for us. You know, Sri Yukteswar was also married. He also raised a daughter, and he didn't become a swami until his daughter was safely married and he had become a widower. You know, just like we don't think about that period of time, but it was there. This is the life that looks just like ours. But we can't at the same time forget about Babaji, because Babaji is also showing us what is possible, and Lahiri is showing us more likely what we ourselves are doing. But the other side of Lahiri's life was the last 9 years of his life after he retired from his 25 years of being a government accountant, after he had worked out sufficiently the karma of his wife that she awoke to his spiritual greatness. After that, after he initiated her, it said he never slept in the same room with his wife again. And then there's kind of like a footnote. In fact, he never slept after that. He just went downstairs to the living room, which is also a very small little living room there. And he just sat there and meditated. And that's all he did after that. He'd fulfilled this whole lila, is the only word for it, this divine play of being a great soul in the midst of ordinary life, so that all of us will not use our ordinary lives as a reason why we can't be great souls. Because you see, that's the great temptation. If only, then I would. If I didn't have to deal with this, then I would. If only things were different, then I would be different. And how can this, such a mundane life, also be a divine one? Well, how can it not? But what Lahiri really also showed us, you see, was inward consciousness. And he kept many diaries about the inner life, which have not yet been really published. I think they're like for another age, where he just did all the experiment, there's some of them that we've seen. He did all the experiments possible that you can do. I mean, he explored the cosmos through meditation. Master writes some letters to Rajasi. Rajasi, whose service to Master's work was to just meditate and be in samadhi. Master made suggestions about various things Rajasi could try, you know, in the world of meditation. And that's what Lahiri Mahashaya did. For 9 years, he sat there and simply meditated. He often didn't talk. And his disciples just came into his presence, would meditate with him. Sometimes he talked to them a little. Sometimes they just take his darshan and then go away. Day or night, yogis would come from the Himalayas. And there was no organization. There was no publicity. It was just as the kriya flower emanating its perfume. He was the epitome of consciousness is everything. How we express what the form is makes no difference. The only thing that matters is who we are inside ourselves. You know, at various times in my life, traveling around, I've only and always been on this path. I'm not one who had to go through, you know, a lot of searching. It came to me early and I have stayed with it. But in the course of travel, I've met other spiritual leaders and been to other ashrams, not personally, but I've been to other ashrams. I've seen other paths and so on like that. And it's not that there's not greatness out there. There is, of course, enormous greatness out there. And when one finds one's own path, it's because it resonates. It's just as simple as that. It's not like it's better. It's simply mine. Swamiji put it in terms of, I'm not going to argue that my mother was the best mother of all mothers, he said, but she was my mother. And that made her perfect in my eyes because she was my own. And so it's the same with our spiritual path. We don't have to compare it. We just know that this is mine. But it's also mine or yours because it suits us. And so oftentimes I've been to other ashrams and the people who love them, love them. But I always think to myself, I'm so glad we have so many choices. I'm so glad this path just allows so many of us to be so diverse and yet still be dedicated to it. And at different times and different stages of our lives, I remember I had this small trailer for a number of years when I lived in Ananda Village, and I had a little bed here, and there was a shelf above with all the pictures of the masters. And literally one time in the middle of the night, the picture of Babaji just flipped off the shelf and landed right on my chest like this and woke me up. You know, it just, nothing else fell, nothing was disturbed, but he just jumped off and landed right on my chest with a thunk. And I thought, I think there's a message here. You know, it was not like a brilliant thing that I had to figure out. And it was a time of more intense renunciation than other periods of time I've had. So Babaji says, this is what I need. And then there are other periods of our life where we are duty bound. You know, we're duty bound. We have children to raise. We have money to earn. We have households to care for. We have parents that we have to see through the end of their lives. All of these things which can feel like they're an interruption. But when that period of our time comes and we're tempted to think, if only, then we just turn in another direction. And we find this subtle, hidden vibration of Lahiri, where he was magnificently drawn to the Himalayas in one of the most dramatic stories in that book, except for the others about Babaji. You know, just taken to this place and the palace is materialized and he receives this initiation and then he prays for all of us. Babaji says, you know, this technique must be hidden. Only those who can renounce everything are allowed to learn this Kriya. And then on our behalf, Lahiri says, oh, come on, that's going to be so few. You know, the suffering others would be so helped if they could have it. And then, of course, it's all just a lila for our sake. But Babaji says, through you, the divine has spoken. And so even that example of compassion for the effort it takes to live in this world with an elevated consciousness. And that's compassion not only so that we can feel that God is reading our hearts and he understands, but so that we can look at ourselves with that same compassion. Because oftentimes that's the hardest part, isn't it? You know, we have this idea in our mind of who we're supposed to be. And sometimes it's an endless conflict with who we think we're supposed to be and the everyday evidence of who we actually are. And it's very tempting on the spiritual path to go to war with yourself. And somehow thinking that that's going to bring us what we want. I warred with myself for many years, and I finally got it down to a very clear picture, which is some part of me thought that there was a far better version of me that was just hidden in the closet. And if I just kept really refusing to be nice to the one who was showing up, then that at some point the really perfect one would just hop out of the closet and it would all be settled. I mean, that's a little complicated, but that's actually where I was. And then one day, the only phrase I can use is with a sickening thud, it occurred to me that this was the best one of me. Really? And it's moments like that, then you think, well, Lahiri Mahashaya was a government accountant for 25 years. It's kind of hard to think of something less glamorous. I mean, I wasn't there, maybe it was, but it's hard to think of it. You know, just to getting up every morning and going and doing a job that has very little sparkle or glamour and that you can hardly call your destiny. But that's where we find ourselves, don't we? Tremendous amount of life is really mundane. And even the best of circumstances just have that part to them. And actually, that's really what defeats us in life. I mean, some people are broken by great dramatic tragedies, but most people are broken by the sheer mundaneness of it all. And that is a much bigger challenge to master, which is to realize that God is not going to be present any more later than he already is right now. I have this other theory. This is the gospel according to Asha. I always have to make clear that this is not necessarily Master's teachings. That we're born with a certain momentum. You can call it the momentum of youth if you want to. I think I call it that we're like a soccer ball and God does a drop kick when we're born. He just drops the ball on his foot and he gives it a big whack. And then we're just kids, we run, we're teenagers, we're 20, we have all this enthusiasm, we think something's going to happen. Then whatever point we get on the spiritual path and we just think, I thought it was about 5 years to samadhi. Don't ask me where that number came from, but that's what I thought it was. Fortunately, by the time 5 years had passed, I had forgotten. But nonetheless, but there was a point, and I really remember it, actually, when I realized that the automatic momentum had stopped. And if I was going to stay vibrant and happy on the spiritual path, from then on it would be an act of will. And I remember just realizing that, realizing, oh, this is why people reincarnate over and over again. Because there's a certain point where that just put one foot in front of the other, do the practice, keep your consciousness on God, have faith, and by will and devotion, you just keep believing and keep going. You know, and I don't find Babaji a lot of help at that point, you know, but I think about Lahiri Mahashaya, and I think of that government office, and I think about the example of being able to never forget God, no matter how simple and unexciting the environment is, no matter how little our particular role in this is. You know, most of us are really unimportant, and that's the hardest part. I've seen others and myself, if I can't be the best, at least I'll be the worst. You know, at least I will stand out. Whereas most of us, and my favorite word is, we're just kind of mediocre. We just kind of hang in the middle. We're neither Master's best disciple nor his worst. We're just one of those who are persevering. But then there's the other side of it, which is, you know, not a sparrow, not a grain of sand is without the sight, outside the sight of God. You know, and Babaji tells Lahiri that he watched him in his youth. Babaji said, I never lost sight of you. And Lahiri was a little child, and of course he was a great soul from the beginning. He meditated out in the sun, and he buried his little body in the sand and meditated in the sand. And Babaji talked about, I was always watching you. But we think that Babaji is only watching Lahiri. But Babaji is watching every one of us. And what you have to understand, which is so important to understand, is if the worst of sinners moves an inch toward God, it's as glorious a moment from the divine point of view, because someone is turning toward the light. And we're all equal in the eyes of God. Swamiji added that into the Festival of Light. It's not just Krishna and Babaji and great saints everywhere, But it's the worst of sinners, those who have sinned most greatly. We're all equally loved by God and equally cheered by God. One of my favorite near-death experiences is whoever he was, and I don't know who he was. He died, and he was went into his life review. Of course, he came back, but he went into his life review. His life review took place on the field of a huge stadium with tens of thousands of people in it, all light beings, and there he was having his life review, and they were all cheering for him. I mean, don't you just love that? And he was, I don't know who he was, but he was just some ordinary guy. I mean, ordinary from the world's point of view, but there was an entire stadium of light beings who were cheering for him to make it. You know, and making it was what? You know, just being a little nicer than he was, a little more God-centered than he was. He wasn't going to change the course of history, but he was changing his destiny, and he was changing the world by turning to the light. Now, of course, Lahiri was an avatar. He did sit for 9 years without sleeping in a constant state of samadhi, and he did bury his little body in the sand and meditate for hours under the hot sun, and he was called to the Himalayas, and Babaji materialized a palace. So he's not your ordinary guy. There's no question about that. But the life he lived looked just like ours, to a very large extent. And God is just as much eager for us to have our little tiny victories in our little government accounting office as he was celebrating the life of Lahiri. You know, the curé d'art in France, this is the famous phrase that Swami always says, if you knew how much God loves you, you would die for joy. That's really something to think about, isn't it? I mean, that's the whole battle. The whole battle is to believe that. That's what Lahiri did. He just sat there and radiated the perfect love of the divine. He just, in silence, would sit there, and you would walk into his presence, and you would believe that. So that's what we need to do. We need to walk into his presence, and we have to simply believe that we are loved by God.
How shall I love thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I love thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desire. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desire. How shall I seek thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I seek thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. How shall I serve thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I serve thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. How shall I worship thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I worship thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. How shall I love thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I love thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. How shall I seek thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I seek thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. How shall I serve thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I serve thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. How shall I worship thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I worship thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desires. How shall I love thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I seek thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe? How shall I serve thee, Lord, my God, with every breath I breathe?
I have been roaming, forsaken by thee. Seen me groping, hardly ever answering. I shall be roaming, roaming, bursting all the boundaries of heart, evermore moving toward thee, to thy vast unthrobbing heart.
Thou to me, O Lord, O come at last to me. Centuries and centuries I have waited now for thee. Through endless incarnations I've called out for thy streamlets of all my silvery dreams.
I know that thou must come at last to steal the flowers of my heart. In sorrow thrills I piped my love. I sadly sing my song to thee.
Yet I know my love must reach thee, though many lives I have to wait on mountain crags of high devotion.